Two Green Berets were killed in combat in Afghanistan on Wednesday, a reminder that the war there is not over. These deaths followed the horrific bombing at a wedding party in Kabul last weekend, claimed by ISIS, where 80 people died. President Trump has talked about withdrawing U.S. troops if a peace deal is reached with the Taliban. But a troop withdrawal could bring its own challenges, and history might provide some guidance. Keddie Davison, a retired Army colonel, served two tours in Afghanistan, and she's now director of innovation and tradecraft at the Institute for the Study of War. She joins us from NPR in Washington. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
You wrote an essay about the Soviet Union's withdrawal from Afghanistan in 1989 and the lessons the United States could and should take from that withdrawal. We'll have a link at hereandnow.org. But remind us why the Soviet Union was fighting there in the first place and why they pulled out.
The Soviet Union recognized that they actually had a national interest at stake, and they moved in to prop up a struggling communist regime. And after almost a decade of fighting, they came to the realization that the price they were paying, the cost, simply wasn't worth what they were getting out of it. And so they made a conscious decision to withdraw their forces.
And what happened when they withdrew their forces?
So they faced a number of challenges as they withdrew, and some of these are similar to the challenges that we might face. So one of the first things that happened is they put their forces on the defensive in order to prepare for the withdrawal. And so what this did is deny the Afghan security forces that they were working with the assistance of the Soviet forces that were on the ground with them. And this started to place stress on the Afghan security forces. You had other challenges as well, though. We had the Mujahideen that had been fighting the Soviet forces and their Afghan partners at the time. And external forces, such as the United States and Pakistan, continued to provide arms to the Mujahideen. So as the Soviets were preparing for withdrawal, they still were experiencing significant attacks from these well-armed Mujahideen. Mm-hmm. Now, as we consider our own withdrawal, we probably need to look at this lesson in history, because we can expect that Russia, perhaps with Iran and even Pakistan's support, might return the favor and continue to arm not just possibly the Taliban, but the 20-something constellation of extremist groups that operate in Afghanistan right now.
Mm.
So just as the Soviet forces had to fight their way out, we faced the real possibility that we might have to as well.
Can you talk about that a little bit more? These groups like the Taliban or maybe the ISIS laying out the groundwork to take advantage of a possible withdrawal.
So right now what we have going on is a potential peace deal or a settlement between the U.S., the United States, and the Taliban. But there are significant actors that aren't included in these negotiations. So you have new forces that the Soviets did not have to contend with, such as Al-Qaeda and even the Islamic State's Khorasan province. These groups that are not a party to the negotiations will have no reason to lay down their arms or abide to any ceasefire that the Taliban agreed to. You may also face the situation where hardline elements of the Taliban decide that peace isn't necessarily in their interest either, and they might actually move to some of these more extreme jihadist groups.
You mentioned the Soviets had to fight their way out, and if I hear you correctly, you say that that may be the case for the U.S. and NATO troops who might be leaving.
Yes. Yeah, so not only did the Soviet forces have to fight their way out, they had to bring additional combat power into the country in order to secure the forces as they left. There is the chance that the United States and NATO forces might have to do the same, bring in different kinds of combat power to be able to protect the forces as they go on the defensive and prepare for the withdrawal.
And what would be the motives, the reasoning why this would happen? Is it that they want the United States to stay? Give us a little bit more understanding of that.
So the jihadist networks absolutely do not want the United States to stay. That's one of the reasons that they're fighting so hard, is they want to expel these occupying forces. But they also have no incentive to let the United States withdraw peacefully. In fact, you might even see a competition where these multiple jihadist groups try to make bigger and bigger attacks to be able to get a propaganda victory and claim credit for expelling the occupying forces.
back to the lessons learned from the Soviet Union withdrawing, there's another issue you bring up in your essay that many of us don't think about, and that's the brain drain that happened when the Soviets pulled out back in the 90s. You believe the same thing could happen again. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. What we have right now are significant elements of the population that actually support the current government of Afghanistan. And so what the Soviets faced was sort of this pan-Afghan insurgency, where your Tajiks, Uzbeks, Hazaras, and Pashtuns came together to form these Mujahideen groups to fight these godless occupiers. We have a different situation right now in Afghanistan. The overwhelming majority of your Tajiks, Uzbeks, and Hazaras, and most of your Pashtuns actually support the current government of Afghanistan and the national security forces that support that government. All of these different groups that have supported the current government and have been opposed to the Taliban and fighting them for almost two decades, it's hard to believe that they're going to simply step aside, allow the Taliban, who hasn't been defeated, and also hasn't won a victory, to simply push them out of power and then stay in the country and provide their talents to the Taliban government. We're more likely to see a mass exodus of a lot of the educated civil servants that supported the current government that will probably have no role in the type of government that the Taliban envisions.
You write that the Soviet Union left behind a functioning central government and funding $300 million a month, while the U.S. and NATO may leave behind no government at all.
So what we have right now in Afghanistan is a national unity government that came out of a compromise from the last election that hasn't necessarily acted as a unified government. We have presidential elections scheduled in Afghanistan for next month. The peace talks, though, between the U.S. and the Taliban and the potential for some sort of interim government are actually calling into question whether or not this next presidential election is even going to go forward, and if it does, whether it will have sufficient participation to have the results be legitimate. So if you have a government right now that isn't necessarily unified, you have a potential government that's going to come out of elections if they occur, potentially not have legitimacy. You've got this nebulous idea of what an interim government might be, and a Taliban potential reintegration with people who have been opposing the Taliban for the last couple of decades. This does not lend a lot of confidence to an idea that you're going to have a unified and functioning central government in Afghanistan over the near term. The challenge that you have when you don't have a functioning central government is you also don't have an ability to be able to receive international funds and then use those funds to pay your Afghan security forces, who can then translate that funding into operational capability. Mm. And one more additional challenge, if you've built, as we did, a national security force, and the national government that force is supposed to be loyal to is in question, then you can see how fragile the entire apparatus is.
Mm. You have decades of military experience. I'd love to know your personal thoughts as you watch all of this play out in Afghanistan right now.
So my heart goes out to the families of the fallen, and there is no way to make up for that loss. But Afghanistan is not an easy place to leave. Great powers go into Afghanistan because they have national interests at stake, and they find it hard to leave Afghanistan because of those national interests that are at stake. So this is not an easy decision to decide to withdraw or even to decide how to withdraw. So my thoughts are this is an extremely complicated and complex environment with no easy solutions, and we are paying a high price for our national interests right now.
Ketty Davison is a retired Army colonel. She's now Director of Innovation and Tradecraft at the Institute for the Study of War. We'll link you to her essay about the challenges of withdrawing from Afghanistan at hereandnow.org. Thank you so much, Colonel, for talking with us.
Thank you. It was great being here.